right. Our next case, 11-0599, State of Ohio versus Donald Eford.
May it please the court, Alan Regas, representing the State of Ohio. I'm assistant prosecuting attorney in Cuyahoga County. I would ask this court to allow 5 minutes in rebuttal time. In this case, Mr. Eford was found guilty of possession of drugs. The verdict form read, guilty of possession of drugs as charged in count two of the indictment. Count two of the indictment charged the possession of cocaine in an amount less than 5 grams.
Did the indictment specify what the drug was?
Yes, it did. It said cocaine in the amount less than 5 grams. The trial court sentenced Mr. Eford as if this were felony of the fifth degree. For the first time on appeal, Mr. Eford complained that under State versus Pelfrey, which is a recent decision of this court, that the verdict form was inadequate to state a felony offense. The 8th District found and followed the 4th District and found that the verdict form did not state a felony possession of drug offense, but rather stated that it only authorized sentencing as a misdemeanor.
Mr. Regas, what was the distinction between the language of the indictment and the language that the jurors actually signed?
The jurors, the verdict form read, we find the defendant guilty of possession of drugs in violation of RC 2925-11 as charged in count two of the indictment. The indictment, however, listed the elements of the offense, which included as an element of the offense that the drug possessed was cocaine in an amount less than 5 grams.
And there was no interrogatory given to the jurors to ask them the type of drug or the amount?
No, there was not in this case because there was no aggravating element that would increase the level of the charge, the level of the offense charged.
No. That's not usually the practice in these types of cases to actually test the verdict and say, what are the jurors finding, and what is the amount of drugs that they have found have been proven beyond a reasonable doubt?
Where the indictment is clear and states an offense without an aggravating element, a general verdict form can and is used in Cuyahoga County.
But the indictment is seen as a type of evidence in Cuyahoga County?
No, it's not a type of evidence. It's the offense charged.
All right.
Okay.
Aren't the jurors told, though, that the indictment merely informs the defendant of the charge and what is to be proven, but the jurors are also told that it is not evidence of anything, correct?
That's correct. We're not talking – I don't think the evidence is disputed here. I don't think there's any dispute that he possessed cocaine. That was the appellate court didn't decide this case on that. There was no evidence of any other drug. There was no evidence of a Schedule II drug or a Schedule III drug or a Schedule IV drug, which would be a misdemeanor offense. What we're looking at the indictment as is to determine what offense was charged. Because Pelfrey relied, and Pelfrey interpreted 294575. 294575 says that where there's an aggravating element, it has to be in the verdict form to raise the level of the offense. The drug at issue in a possession of drug indictment is not an aggravating factor. It defines the offense. If there was no drug stated in the indictment, there would be no offense charged.
What about the amount of the drug, though? Putting aside the identity of the drug, isn't the amount an element that should be shown by the jury?
No, the element is actually the aggravating offense that Pelfrey and 294575 addresses. In this case, the amount was less than 5 grams. It was the minimal amount of cocaine, so therefore it was the lowest offense, lowest level of the offense, a felony of the fifth degree. If we had alleged a higher amount of drugs, we would have asked the court for page 2 of the verdict form, a special finding as to the amount of the drugs possessed to comply with 2945-75 and Pelfrey.
So that's the practice. When it's the least amount, you don't ask for the interrogatory. If there's a charge of a higher amount, then you do.
Yes, because we interpret the indictment as being a felony indictment and the drug that's listed in the indictment as being an element of the offense. So therefore, the general verdict would comply and be read as finding guilt on a felony offense, the offense charged.
Counsel, so the issue in this case is whether or not the offense charge was, in fact, the lowest level of the offense.
Yes, I would agree that that's the way that the districts have differed in finding whether Pelfrey mandates the drug charge to be stated in the verdict form. And in the 5th and the 10th districts in Pace and Middlebrook, which are referenced in the indictment and the brief of the amicus from Franklin County, those courts see and define the offense as the drug as being an element of the offense. Therefore, the general verdict form in this case stated a felony offense.
Is this confused around the state?
I think so. I think there's clearly this specific issue in the 5th and the 10th district that they found that Pelfrey and 2945-75 do not apply in a case like this. They don't go as far to say that we don't need to specify the weight if it aggravates above the felony offense.
Did the prosecutor who tried this case have an opportunity to review the verdict forms before they were submitted to the jury?
Yes, and they were read to the jury.
Were they approved by your office?
Yes, because there was no...
You know of this issue as a statewide problem. Why doesn't your office instruct them to be overly cautious and insert a finding as to what the drug, in fact, is, so that we don't continue to get these issues?
I would say, first of all, at the time, Pelfrey was a very recent case. There had been no real authority that had come out either way as defining.
But you've since conformed your practice in the prosecutor's office, so now you do that on a regular basis? Is that what you're telling us?
We do that, and I know that...
So we won't see any more of these from the 8th District?
I hope not. I can certainly hope not, because we only see cases at this court when it's not tried to perfection, when it's not there. However, I would submit that at the time that this case was tried, and given the 8th District precedent, the interpretation of whether the drug needed to be listed in the verdict form, this was proper. This was properly done, and I submit that this general verdict was proper under Pelfrey because Pelfrey does not apply, and 2945-75 does not apply because the least degree of the offense charged here in this case, in this type of case, is a felony offense.
As you know, cocaine is
an element of the offense that was proven, and the general verdict form is sufficient to find that offense charged.
As you know, I joined Justice O'Donnell in dissenting in Pelfrey because we agree with the position that you took on this case. But in Pelfrey, there was an additional issue of waiver. Does that apply at all in this case? Was there waiver? Was there any objection? How would that differ from Pelfrey in terms of a waiver issue?
In my brief, I did argue that the waiver should apply here, that when this court in Pelfrey said that the waiver or that's only if, and I'm doing that hypothetically because I don't agree that Pelfrey applies at all. However, this is a statutory issue. It's not a constitutional issue. Substantial compliance with the statute was met. So that's the first, second. And waiver, there certainly should apply on a statutory argument. It wasn't raised. In fact, the level of offense found by this verdict form was specifically agreed to by the defendant. The court asked at the sentencing hearing, is this a felony of the fifth degree? Yes, it is. So I think that waiver should apply here because it's a statutory claim. It's not a constitutional issue. And there's certainly no plain error that would be prejudicial in this case. The indictment stated cocaine. The evidence stated cocaine. The jury instruction stated cocaine. So the verdict form is clear. It's a general verdict that described a felony offense as charged in the indictment.
Mr. Regas, did I understand you to say that a felony is the least amount of the, or the lowest amount of the offense?
Yes.
Because what about a misdemeanor? There's misdemeanor drug possession, is there not?
Only if the drug is named. Possession of drugs, an element of the offense, and this is the state's position, and it was adopted in Middlebrook and Pace, that the offense charge, there is no generic catch-all provision of possession of drugs. We simply can't have possession of drugs in an indictment. It would be dismissed. It would not state all the elements of the offense. One of the elements has to be the drug found. I believe there's seven delineations within the statute that then define possession of drugs. So it's possession of drugs, cocaine, possession of drugs, marijuana. At that point, the level of offense is determined by the amount. Possession of cocaine is never a misdemeanor offense. Therefore, this is a felony offense as charged.
Although the verdict did not say possession of cocaine?
That's correct. The
it
general
said possession
verdict
of drugs?
It said possession of drugs as charged in the indictment. And that general verdict does refer, and in all cases would refer back to the indictment to determine the offense. The only way to say that this was a misdemeanor is to say that there's a catch-all provision in the drug statute, and that the drug itself is not an element of possession of drugs. I would say that the statute as written, where it defines seven, and I apologize if it's seven, six, or eight, defines varying drugs, that is an element of the offense. After that, then we would look to the weight to determine the level of the offense. Counsel. So if this was a marijuana case, certainly there would have been a special finding as to the weight. Marijuana goes from a minor misdemeanor all the way up to a higher felony. So I would agree when you look at that case, but that's a marijuana offense, drug possession marijuana, which is a separate and distinct offense than possession of cocaine.
Counsel, could you refresh my recollection as to why the jury would know what is alleged in the indictment? Now, they don't have the indictment in the jury room.
The instructions were given to them. And the instructions in this case, and I included those in my brief, mirrored the indictment. In order to find him guilty of possession of drugs, they were instructed as to all the elements of the offense, which included that the drug at issue was cocaine.
Was it the practice in this case to have the instructions go into the jury room with the jurors?
Yes. You know? Yes, it is. It's. I don't know any court, any common pleas judge that doesn't provide those to the jurors. I would also say, and to go back, when I was looking at, and it was an informal survey, where the drug is the least offense, where there's no aggravation, half the courts right now in Cuyahoga County, or half the judges, will instruct in this manner with the verdict forms. The other half I have seen. So I've seen examples of both continuing today because we believe that the offense charge was a felony and that Pelfrey does not apply. So I'd ask to reserve my remaining time in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. King.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court. Counsel for Mr. Eifert would like to split time. Mr. Martin will present the second half of the argument.
What's your time split?
About half, but okay. Certainly I'll be willing to answer what questions the panel has. In this matter, the jury found Mr. Eifert guilty of a different offense than those that were indicted. Possession of drugs under 29251C2 is a distinct offense from possession of cocaine under 2925.11c4. Therefore, the verdict returned did not call for the application of 2945.75 or State v. Pelfrey.
Did the court jury instructions comport properly with what the law was and this, and count two in the indictment?
Yes, and those instructions set forth the charge, which the state presented, and that was it was indicted as possession of cocaine, and it was charged as possession of cocaine.
And the court instructed the jury on possession of cocaine.
It did. That instruction comported with, again, the indictment and with what the state presented in its case in chief.
And the verdict form returned said that the members of the jury determined the defendant was guilty as charged in count two of the indictment.
Yes, and guilty of possession of drugs as found or as charged in count two of the indictment.
And how could the jury then be misled and not render a right verdict under those instructions and the evidence presented? Explain to me. I don't understand that.
I don't believe that the jury was misled. Now, I'll go to the fact that what the state of Ohio presented here was a case of possession of cocaine. Again, they presented an indictment. Mr. Eford knew that he was being charged with possession of cocaine. The state then presented witnesses that talked about possession of cocaine.
Well, presumably they presented some cocaine, didn't they?
And yeah, that one of the witnesses was a lab technician who then talked about testing and specifically what was found in regard to, it would seem, what was found in regard to count two, the possession of cocaine.
So how could the jury be led astray, or how could the jury's verdict mean anything other than cocaine?
You're right, Your Honor. It does mean something other than possession of cocaine. However, they weren't led astray, not by the state. The state presented.
Did you say the jury was found something other than the possession of cocaine?
They did. They found a separate and distinct crime, which is possession of drugs, and that
they
involved.
Understood that, or do you think they understood that they were finding him guilty of the possession of cocaine?
Well, what they did was to find possession of drugs. What they were asked to do was to find possession of cocaine. I don't think we can determine where that exact.
And is that hyper-technical conclusion, because that's all it can be, because all the facts and evidence are cocaine, is that hyper-technical conclusion based on the language of Pelfrey?
It is not. It is not. Pelfrey involves when you have both Pelfrey interpreting 2945.75, when you have an enhancement of a crime to a greater degree.
So you don't think Pelfrey applies here?
I think it does not, no.
Counsel, mechanically, how does this work? The jury in this case, did the judge's instructions at the end of the trial go in written form to the jury?
The instructions were sent back to the jury, yes.
Okay. And a verdict form was sent in with them. Two verdict forms.
Yes, three actually.
Three. And they were, what were the three verdict forms?
One was for permitting drug abuse. One was for possession of drugs. I believe the third was for possession of criminal tools.
Okay. Say that again.
But the first was, I believe, count one was permitting drug abuse, letting his house be used by others.
Right.
And count two was for possession of drugs. And then the third, I believe, was possession of criminal tools.
Okay. So you said they were asked to find possession of cocaine.
The state presented a case of possession of cocaine, yes.
But, in fact, they weren't asked to do that. They were asked to find possession of drugs because that's the form that was sent in.
That's where the disconnect
charge
is, yes, that the form was different. The
jury did not do anything except fill out the forms, guilty or not guilty, the three forms that they were sent.
Correct.
Sent into the jury room.
Yes.
And there's no handwritten jury response or any crossing out of anything at all.
There was not. No, the verdict form came back with the one blank, right. I believe, filled in, and the places for their signatures all signed.
Right.
So, Mr. King, why isn't it the flawed verdict form? Why isn't that harmless error, based on what you've said? You've said that the jurors were given the appropriate, or they had the appropriate evidence before them. They had the appropriate instructions. It appears that the verdict form should have stated that the drug possession was cocaine. That's missing. Why isn't it harmless error?
If it was just a matter of a missing word, it might be harmless error, and it might invoke the application of Pelfrey. But what the jury did was to find a different offense. They found Mr. Eford guilty of a separate crime, and that is a completed verdict.
Counsel, can you be found guilty of possession of drugs without naming what that drug is?
That's what happened here, so yes. And
No, I mean in reality. Forget the verdict form here. Mm-hmm. If there was, is there evidence that's ever put on and the finding is not required the jury is not required to find what the drug was?
The better course would be for the jurors to be given that information on that information be included on the verdict form, because there are seven different offenses.
Isn't one of the elements, though, that you have to show as the state of Ohio is that the substance was a drug, a controlled substance, and identify it, and that's why you have your lab technicians present to identify that?
Yes, and again, the state didn't error by not presenting it. They presented that. They presented a case of possession of cocaine. But the verdict did not reflect that. And what it did reflect was a separate crime.
What crime did it reflect?
That possession of drugs under 29-2511C2, which, by the way, is the offense of having controlled substances that are listed under schedules 3, 4, and 5. It's very specific.
But it identifies the drug that you had to have in your possession to be guilty of that possession of drug, correct? A controlled substance under 3, 4, or 5?
Yes.
Okay. So my point is that the state has to identify the type of drug that is in the possession of the defendant in order for the state to meet its burden of proof.
Yes, they do.
Okay. And so there is really no crime that is referenced, to take your argument, there is really no legitimate crime referenced in the verdict form because there's no such crime as just possession of drugs. You have to identify the drug. Am I right?
I understand your argument, yes. And most of the sections of 29-2511 under C identify a certain substance. I mean, there's a number of them, cocaine, LSD,
right, but,
heroin.
But the only evidence presented was to cocaine.
And that is the fact. And there are two of these offenses that list multiple substances, one of which being this possession of drugs, which is schedules 3, 4, and 5, and there's aggravated possession of drugs, which is schedules 1 and 2.
But you still have to identify the drugs.
If you identify the state. I agree with the Chief Justice that if you identify the drugs, it's much more clear. But what?
No. At trial, you have to identify the drugs.
Certainly.
The evidence has to be there.
Yes, or you would probably not get past a Rule 29.
Exactly. Order. So my point is the reference in the verdict form back to the indictment, which names the drug of cocaine, why is that insufficient here?
It is sufficient. The state presented sufficient evidence of possession of cocaine, but the jury didn't find that. Their verdict did not speak to that. It spoke to a separate offense.
But it says, as charged in the indictment.
And
the verdict form was found guilty of drug possession in violation of 2925.11A of the revised code as charged in the indictment. And the charge in the indictment spells out it's less than 5 grams of cocaine.
And the verdict form says a different charge. So when it refers to as charged in the indictment, they don't match. They do not match up.
The counsel, the verdict form, and that separate crime is, again, the subsections are which? The one that the form went in is subsection what of the code?
The case was tried to, and the jury was instructed, as to C4, which is cocaine.
And the form was C what?
C2, possession of drugs.
And can cocaine get you a conviction under C2?
No.
So your client then, under your theory, there's no misdemeanor at all. There's nothing.
There is not. Because he was found guilty of a charge he wasn't indicted for, that conviction should be vacated. But because the state did not get a verdict returned on the charge that they tried, they should be free to address that charge again, to pursue it again.
So in the final analysis, we have a case that was tried under C4, possession of cocaine, and the trial court inadvertently submitted a verdict form asking the jury to return a verdict on a C2, subsection C2, which wasn't the case that the jury tried. Someone typed C2 instead of C4 on that verdict form. No one called it to the court's attention, and the jury returned a verdict of a different subsection. And your argument is that he should be discharged on that, and the case should be retried on the C4.
I believe it could be retried, yes.
That's your position.
It is.
Is that quite correct? Did the form say C2?
It did not. No, but the language of it referred. The language of the trial referred to C4. The language of the verdict referred to C2.
You're talking about the language. You're not talking about the specific 2925.11 C2. That was not on the verdict.
The numbers were not on the verdict forms. No.
So you're simply looking at what the language of the verdict form is.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
And if I might, if we have a moment, defer to co-counsel.
Just about a moment.
Long drive for a moment.
May it please the court. It's always a pleasure, and I thank the court for its indulgence. This is the equivalent of a situation where a defendant is indicted for robbery, and a verdict form comes back and says, we find the defendant guilty of felonious assault. You have a disconnect. Possession of drugs is a term is a technical legal term. It describes the possession of a Schedule 3, 4, or 5 controlled substance. Cocaine is a Schedule 2. So you have a situation where this isn't Pelfrey, this isn't 2945.75. Respectfully, this is a combination of errors that is not worthy of this court's plenary consideration. This case should be improvidently allowed. But what you have here is this disconnect between this is what was charged in the indictment and this is what the verdict form says. And when this court, if this court were to accept the state's suggestion that you can look beyond what the jury said, you start down a very slippery, unconstitutional slope.
Is it your view that the jury has not returned a verdict on the case that was tried by the state?
Yes.
And therefore, if it chose, the state could retry him on that charge?
They could. They could.
Without any double jeopardy problem.
That's correct.
Mr. Martin, if the indictment, though, is for possession of drugs, the cocaine, and the jury is and the evidence is on cocaine, and the verdict is flawed, isn't it harmless error?
No, it can't be harmless error, because harmless error cannot be a means by which a judicial interpretation is placed on the final words of a jury. The jury is, at the end of the day, the ultimate arbiter. What they say goes. Harmless error may explain why their verdict is correct, but harmless error cannot be the vehicle by which a court substitutes its judgment for the jury's. Basically, what the state of Ohio would have you do is say, this verdict form says possession of drugs, grab the eraser. It should have said possession of cocaine. And you cannot mess with, to use the legal term, a jury's verdict.
The reference back to the indictment, as charged in the indictment, when the indictment charges with possession of cocaine less than 5 grams, that's not to be read in conjunction with that verdict form?
Your Honor, if the verdict form had simply said, we find the defendant guilty as charged in count two of the indictment, that would be different, and that would be a valid verdict. But when the jury says, we find the defendant guilty of possession of drugs as charged in the indictment, it's just like that robbery indictment where you sit there. If the jury says, we find the defendant guilty as charged in count two of the indictment,
but
he's guilty.
The problem with that argument is a jury knows the difference between a robbery and a felonious assault. I don't think a jury in it, any stretch of the imagination, thinks there's a difference between drug abuse and possessing cocaine.
Your Honor, possession. The problem, though, becomes this. When this court begins to say, we don't think this jury knew this, we think this jury meant this, then, if you will, you've introduced parole evidence to a piece of paper that has to stand on its face.
The prosecutor tells us that about half the verdict forms are like this in Cuyahoga County. Does that mean we're going to have to throw out half of their cases if we find in your favor?
We could only hope, but no, Your Honor. Your Honor.
If you win this case, aren't you going to be appealing all of those?
I would submit to the court that this isn't a matter of needing to win this case. Really, this case, this combination of prosecutors who didn't look at the verdict forms, prosecutors who didn't listen when the verdict form was read. And by the way, the defense has no obligation to sit there and raise their hand and say, well, excuse me, we'd like a higher offense. But the prosecutor has three opportunities to review that verdict form. Before it goes to the jury, listen when the verdict is returned, and then look at it after the verdict's returned before the jury's discharged.
But if we take your argument to what is the logical conclusion, you don't believe that there's any verdict. The Court of Appeals reduced this to a misdemeanor, but you believe the misdemeanor is even wrong.
I would submit to the court that in this particular case, even the misdemeanor is wrong, that this court should follow what the First District Court case that we cited, which says that when you have this kind of disconnect between indictment and verdict, where they one says A and one says B, the only thing to be done is to try the case again. Because if this court begins to substitute its judgment for what the jury said, then we start down the line of, well, Your Honors, I'll come back here and say, well, Your Honors, they found him not guilty of 17 counts. They must have meant not guilty on count 18.
Counsel, don't we oftentimes make a determination? In fact, the trial court makes a determination sometimes where the jury has lost its way.
Yes.
Okay. So the overarching review of the evidence and the verdicts of the jury, both in criminal and civil cases, have been called in just what you're saying. The judge stating that the jury has lost their way and therefore there is a judgment notwithstanding the verdict.
And yes, Your Honor, in those circumstances, there will either be a directed acquittal, which would be improper here, or a new trial. When juries lose their way, the remedy is not, And the remedy can never be constitutionally consistent with the Sixth and Fourteenth Amendments to say the jury lost their way, we will find the defendant guilty anyway. We will find the defendant guilty of something different than what the jury's verdict said. The jury did lose its way. A new trial is appropriate. In this particular case...
How could the jury have lost their way in this particular case when they were only given one way to find, which was that verdict form? They didn't... Did the jury have the authority or even the knowledge that they could modify that jury form, that there was something incorrect on that jury form? They were given an instruction, and they applied the instruction. They came to a conclusion based on the evidence, the instruction, et cetera. And then they had this piece of paper in front of them, and they said, is it the jury's responsibility or even have the ability to look at that and say, excuse me, this doesn't comport with what we're being asked to do?
It's not the jury's responsibility to have to do that, but it falls on the state and on the trial court that when there is this type of disconnect, that a defendant does not suffer the consequences of that. If you will, you know, there's certain times in every trial where prosecutors have to be careful. You don't forget the venue question. You don't forget to ID the defendant. You make sure, and if you sit there afterwards and this court's on appeal and says, we never heard evidence of venue, did that affect the jury's verdict? Probably not. But you cannot substitute your judgment for what the jury must have meant. And that ultimately is the problem in this case. If you accept the state's argument, you have to, if you will, say, yes, this is what the jury said, but this is not what they meant.
So, Mr. Martin, you had two suggestions here. At one point you said this case should be improved, and then I thought I heard you saying that the case should be remanded for a new trial. Which is it?
Well, if you're going to address the merits of this case, then it's a new trial. The reason for the improvidently allowed alternative is that the issue that this case really boils down to is not the issue that was presented in the state's proposition of law. It was not the issue that came before this court. It's not even the issue that properly percolated through the 8th District. And it's because of the fact that this case shows up in this mishmash way that I would suggest to the court that an improvidently allowed, particularly in a case where there's already been an F5 conviction on another count, he's already served the sentence, I believe, an improv would not be inappropriate, would be appropriate in a case where the legal issue before this court is not the one that was submitted in the state's proposition of law. And I don't accuse them in any way of being disingenuous.
Even if it's improv, he can be retried.
And even as improv, right? Yes, Your Honor, even as improv, he could be retried.
And how widespread, in your view, is this problem across Ohio? Is this an 8th District problem, or is this a statewide problem?
Your Honor, you have to look pretty hard. There have been cases from other districts, but you have to look pretty hard to find them. And it has not been something that comes up very often. It really comes down to read the verdict forms. And I'm hopeful that in all 88 counties, and certainly in the other 87, that prosecutors are reading the verdict forms. If you read the verdict form, you don't have an issue in this case.
Do you see this in Cuyahoga County more frequently?
Your Honor, I'm not trying to duck your question, but as an appellate lawyer, I'm not in the trial court enough to see how those verdict forms look. And to be honest with you, I've never had to confront this issue before this case, so I just don't have an accurate recollection of which way it works. I can assure you of this. After today, if it happens again, there's nobody's fault but the trial judges and the prosecutors, because this argument makes this very, very clear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr.
Mr. Regas, you have a little over a minute.
Thank you. The argument that was presented to say that this is a separate crime in the verdict form is puzzling, because in the same breath he says the general verdict form is okay. He told you that if this said guilty as charged in count two, we wouldn't be here. That would be a felony offense. We do look at the indictment to see what's charged. However, they say that this possession of drugs language is some term of special art. However, it's not, because subsection A says you shall not knowingly possess a controlled substance. So, if anything, the jury verdict form is correct. The only difference is the level, the element of the offense is either it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, marijuana, cocaine, LSD, heroin, or hash. Those are elements of possession of drugs. That was charged in the indictment. The jury was instructed that verdict form, the general verdict form, is correct and does state the offense, possession of cocaine, a felony of the fifth degree.
Mr. Regas, do you agree that if this were, if this case were improved, it could still be remanded for trial?
No, I don't agree, because the 8th District said remanded it for sentencing as to a misdemeanor. It didn't say what kind. However, what level of misdemeanor?
But, counsel, there's no new law to write here. Is there? Are you saying that we need to expand on Palfrey? What is it you want us to rule?
I think this is a problem. I found four separate districts with cases directly addressing this issue. Two of them came out one way, two came out the other. So I think what I put in my proposition law is to state that when it states possession of drugs, you look to the indictment to determine what drug is possessed if it's not directly stated in the verdict form.
Why couldn't we just say that the state reviews the verdict form before the court is dismissed?
I can't say
that. The burden is the state's, just as Mr. Martin alleged.
Certainly, the burden is the state's. But if two appellate districts are going to say that this general verdict form that in with this language states a felony offense, and two appellate courts are going to say different, I'm going to go with the general verdict form, which is proper, which has been used, and I don't think this is an obvious mistake. I don't think that an element of the offense is an aggravating element that requires the application of 294175 and Palfrey. So I don't think that the prosecution did anything wrong by not asking the court to correct or was improvident in allowing this verdict form to go forward without an objection. I really don't think, and I think that because this is now an issue and that the defense, without citation to any authority, has stated possession of drugs, and in quotes, is some sort of legal term of art that changed that verdict form, I think that is completely wrong, and there's no support in the law for that. Possession of drugs is the offense. The indictment defines the offense as possession of cocaine in this case. So I say that the general verdict form was proper, and the 8th District was improper in applying Palfrey 294175. And again, I can say that the prosecutor didn't do anything wrong here by allowing this general verdict form to go before the jury. So I'd ask that the 8th
District... Counsel, would you use this general verdict form again, just the way it is, for a situation like this?
No, I won't, because it did engender some
controversy.
Well,
you're not the trial court, but I'm trial counsel, but I'm presuming that you go back to the 8th District and you gather all the trial counsel together and you say, this is what you need to do from now on.
Yes.
And that happens.
And it did happen after this case. However, we don't believe that this is wrong, but once the 8th District is found in this manner, we certainly do.
Because they
go
say
back
it's wrong,
right,
you'll treat
out
it as wrong for the time being.
Well, in the 8th District, it is wrong, and I'm asking this court to correct that.
Okay, but say we rule in your favor. What's your presumption on the practice in your office then?
I'm going to still think that in possession of drug cases, we'd ask them to be more precise. But I don't think that we would entirely abandon a general verdict, because then we go into different problems as to defining all elements, missing an element, and things. A general verdict form is proper, it is constitutional, and it doesn't violate 2941.75.
You just would reword your general verdict forms a little more precisely?
In drug cases, I'd make sure that we did state the drug, that the, one of the seven enumerated drugs in the verdict form as well. So I'm not going to say that we won't change. It does make it easier to understand, but I don't think there was anything wrong with this verdict form, Your Honor. Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you call a recess, please?